Blog Talk Radio.
There's the snap, hand to Riggins. Good hole. He's got the first down, the 40. He's gone. The 35, the 30, the 20. He's gone. He's gone. Touchdown, Washington Redskins.
Woo-hoo. Kick up. Kick his ball away.
It's good. It's good. It's good. Adam Vinatieri goes to 40. 8-yard field goal. And the game is over. And the Patriots.
Gets the snap. He's back. He pumps. Scrambles around. Throws it back corner of the end zone. Santonio with a touchdown. Santonio holds. I don't know how he did it. Dominique Rogers Cromartie doesn't know how he did it. But they rule touchdown in the far right corner of the end zone.
In motion. Comes right. Back to throw Montana. Steps up. Throws. Touchdown.
Is Red Zone Blitz. Frat House Mike coming to you here on Tuesday, October 25th. And I want you all to just sit back for a moment, think about this one, and let it sink in. As we approach week 8 of the NFL season, that essentially, basically, kind of marks the midpoint of the NFL season. Can you imagine? Hard to believe. I mean, we sit around. It feels like we wait and wait and wait. You know, almost from like the day after the Super Bowl, we wait for months and months and months for the NFL season to return. And just like that, we're talking week 8, going into week 8. Week 8 and week 9 technically mark the midpoint of the NFL season. And, as I pointed out last week, you know, things were starting to become clear last week. I don't know if this past week, week 7, made anything any better or not. I mean, when you look around, now at this point, there are no unbeaten teams remaining in the NFL. The Philadelphia Eagles did something that was basically unthinkable. And God knows how they did it, considering that when it comes right down to it, no thanks to Carson Wentz, Philadelphia Eagles beat the Minnesota Vikings last week. That was kind of improbable. It was improbable on the front end. It was certainly improbable at many, many times during the course of the game if you actually sat there watching the entire event. We're going to talk about the Eagles and the Minnesota Vikings. You got to wonder whether that game might just be the beginning of it for the Minnesota Vikings. Does the Emperor have no clothes? That's been what I've been asking now for a while. I'll tell you, an Emperor that doesn't have any clothes, and that's certainly the Baltimore Ravens. Listen, we talked about them here and have talked about them from the beginning of the season. Started 3-0. They were one of those unbeaten teams many, many weeks ago. Hey, that team is now in free fall. Yeah, they lost their fourth in a row this past weekend. And amazingly, I'm not really hearing a lot of kind of jittery talk out of the Baltimore Ravens area. You would think perhaps maybe you might. They lost to the New York Jets. I mean, seriously, folks, the hapless, disorganized, Keystone Kop New York Jets, who just rotate quarterbacks in and out and did this past weekend. Incredible. incredible. I think it really goes to the talking about the Ravens. We're gonna get into them. I think it goes to a lot of what the Ravens are. How about those Falcons? Brandon said it here a couple of weeks ago. Maybe they're the team that the Emperor has no clothes and certainly don't have any defense. And I think that showed up again this past weekend. 33-30 they lost to the almost as hapless San Diego Chargers. Well, we'll talk a little bit about the Falcons as well. How about the New England Patriots? Just the best in the NFL. But I got to tell you something. We sat and watched that game here at Frat House Sports on Sunday. Yeah, I guess you give a lot of credit to the Patriots. They won that game, but the Steelers certainly had their share of opportunities that they squandered, in my opinion, and they could have easily won that game. So I guess you have to say you can't say that the Steelers lost it because they never had a lead, really, but the Patriots, yeah, they won it, but Steelers didn't look very good in the loss, I'll be honest with you. I'll tell you a game that didn't look very good. It was certainly very, very difficult to watch, and I'm certain it certainly didn't help the NFL TV ratings. And that was that thing they put on Sunday night between the Seattle Seahawks and the Arizona Cardinals that took to overtime to determine that the game was going to conclude 6-6. It was a comedy of errors, and it was ugly. That is, unless you like defense, because I will say this, you got to give credit to both defenses, absolutely smothering defenses on both sides. Anyhow, we're going to get into all of those, and as we always do here on a Tuesday night, well, you can be guaranteed the conversation will just kind of wind around, and believe it or not, we will find a way to touch on probably just about every single team. Maybe not the Cleveland Browns, but just about all of them except for them. Although I did just mention them, didn't I? So maybe we did just touch on them. Anyhow, if anybody wants to jump in with us, don't hesitate. 347-826-9964 is how you can get a hold of us here at Frat House Sports. 347-826-9964. Otherwise, don't hesitate to leave us a comment or question or whatever might be on your mind in our Blog Talk Radio chat room, or you can hit me up on Twitter at Frat House Mike. All right, my Tuesday night co-host, as always, Brandon, how are we doing tonight? Ready to rock and roll?
Yeah, sure.
Ready to talk some football? Okay. Let me start out this way.
Everything.
You're good? We always like to start out with something a little bit maybe kind of off topic, just to kind of, you know, get into the groove of things, keeping us off topic all the time. I happened to sit down, you know, I was just bringing up that Sunday night game, that Seattle Seahawks and Arizona Cardinals game. Six.
Do you really call that a game?
Wow. Well, in the purest sense it was, because as I pointed out, I mean, I don't want to walk away from it without giving kudos to at least some things, because the defenses on both sides of the ball were quite good, as evidenced by the score. But here's the thing I kind of took exception to, and you might just immediately poo-poo it and say, I don't even want to talk about it. We shouldn't even be bringing these sorts of things up. But I happened to take a gander this morning at the USA Today power rankings. Now, both of us are not a big fan of the power rankings. However, and obviously, as I pointed out before, the purpose behind the power rankings are to kind of give you a snapshot of what the league looks like this minute. It's not a projection. It's not a standings. It's to give you an idea of what the league looks like right this minute. And if you use the word power, you would probably say basically they're supposed to be the strongest teams at this any one given moment. The Seattle Seahawks on the USA Today power rankings are ranked number 4. Brandon, I walked away from that one going, what in the world? They're ranked at number 4. They're ahead of Minnesota. They're ahead of the Atlanta Falcons. They're ahead of the Pittsburgh Steelers. They're ranked number four. I don't think there's ever been a better case for the fact that power rankings are out of whack.
Yeah, I would agree.
Number four for the Seattle Seahawks? A 6-6 tie. And mind you, as I pointed out, if you remember on Sunday night we were watching this one, I said, this was the same Seattle team that couldn't put up, what, 3 points against the Los Angeles Rams? That game was 9-3 a couple of weeks ago. So they only put up 3 points in that game. They only put up 6 in this one. How do you rank the Seattle Seahawks number four?
See, as soon as you start getting into questions like this on power rankings, I lose interest in power rankings because I think they're just overblown. I think it's like I said before, I just don't put any credence in it. And if that's, you know, I think Seattle's looked good in any game they played this year, let alone to be the fourth powerful, most powerful team in the NFL. Seriously? No. I bet you the next five in the row should be beneath them, should be above them at the very least. You know, I just don't. We've talked enough about power rankings.
I know.
At this point.
I just thought I'd bring it up, you know, just to get your ire, you know, kind of get your juices going a little bit because you were saying, well, you know, you weren't feeling the best or what have you. I thought maybe this would really get you going for the 90 minutes that we're here. The next five after that, Minnesota is ranked number five. I would put Minnesota ahead of Seattle. Green Bay is ranked number six. I'd put Green Bay above Seattle. The Falcons are seven. Steelers are eight. I'd put both of them above Seattle. Detroit is ranked nine. Kansas City is 10. I would probably put Kansas City above them. I don't know if I would necessarily put Detroit. The Raiders are 11. I'd put the Raiders, I think, ahead of Seattle, for God's sake.
Well, the Raiders should be ahead of Detroit, too. See, that's my point about these power rankings. They're useless. They mean nothing. Because it's all opinion of USA Today columnists. That's how they get those, and ESPN does their football people, and, you know, NFL Network does theirs, and Florio gets his guys on Football Talk to do it, and it's stupid because it's just an opinion piece. There's no point. There's no substance to it, and people put far too much stock in them. I mean, like you just said, you just named six or seven teams, and I agree with you on all of them should be above, you know, except for maybe Detroit. I don't even know how Detroit's even on the list, to be honest with you. They haven't looked that great. You know, they won a couple games that they shouldn't have won, maybe, but I don't, you know, to me, I don't think they're all that.
And, you know, you make a good point. That is an absolute slap, Oakland, to be ranked 11.
Mm-hmm. No, absolutely.
With a 5-2 record.
Just, you know what that says? That says the USA Today columnists, football columnists, do not think,
you know, Oakland fans. Yeah.
Or they don't think they're that team. Whatever, you know, they're entitled to their opinion as much as anybody else is, but, you know, that's why you got to take the power rankings for what they are. I don't find any value in them at all. Cause if you look at all of them, I guarantee you they'd all be different across the, you know, ESPN's NFL.com has them, I'm sure. Florio, I know, does them. And they're always vastly different when I do bother to look.
ESPN had the Philadelphia Eagles ranked today number seven. In this one, USA Today's got the Eagles ranked 12th.
Well, there you go. I don't think they're – see, that just shows you it's all opinion-based. Because that's too big of a disparity if there is any substance behind it. In other words, like stats or a formula, maybe you want to call it. That's why I don't like the power rankings. To me, just they shouldn't be called that. They should be called
the. They come up with a different name.
That's I guess the part that bothers me. I just look at the standings and go from there.
I think I might agree with you. Anyway. The phraseology is what's off.
Well, okay, if they had Seattle, Seattle is four. Where is Arizona in this equation on USA
14.
Today?
14.
See, I don't think there was that big of a difference between the two teams, to be quite honest with you. The game was where? In Seattle, correct? Or no, it was in Arizona. It was in Arizona. So, you know, it's still, I don't think it really matters. I think, you know, to me, that's as much of a joke as anything. Because those teams were very evenly matched.
I agree.
At least defensively. You think they're 10 spots apart? I don't. They tied it. They played five quarters of football. I don't know how you can play five quarters, but, you know, by definition, a quarter would be four, but, you know, they played five periods.
I agree with
football.
You. I agree with you. The two teams, in my opinion, are somewhat – and, you know, I guess in some respects what you have to do is throw the records out the window. And they don't seem to mind throwing the record out the window when it comes to Oakland, who's 5-2 and they rank at 11. So in Oakland's case, we'll throw their record out the window and we'll rank them 11. But almost in all other cases, everybody else is ranked by their record. You know, I do see a pattern. New England's up at the top. They're 6-1. All right, so they're ranked number one. Denver comes in at 5-2. Dallas Cowboys come in at 5-1. They're ranked number three. Minnesota's ranked is 5-1, but they've got them at 5, while Seattle is at 4-1-1. Somewhere along the line, it's bias. I think there's Seattle bias. That's what I think.
Or they're living off their history, maybe. You know, because they were, you know, in the Super Bowl 2 years in a row. They, you know, won the division out there several times. They're serious, you know, players in the playoffs. Maybe they're living off their history a little. Where, you know, some, like you and I, don't think they're all that. I mean, I honestly think Marshawn Lynch's retirement has been a huge impact on that team's offense. He was the linchpin to work. In other words, like, he would keep the defense honest to the point where, you know, some of the mediocre receivers they have would get open, and Russell Wilson would be able to complete a pass or two downfield. And it would also give Russell Wilson some ability to run because they were keying on Marshawn Lynch. So, you know, him going away or retiring, I wouldn't say going away, but, you know, retiring, you know, I think that severely impacted this offense.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, they need to find a you know, either a suitable replacement or they need to get a different weapon that defense can key on to, you know, make the whole thing work.
Yeah, they certainly haven't done anything up to this point to find a suitable replacement. And not that you could probably even really find a replacement for Marshawn Lynch, but even anybody that's comparable.
Well, Thomas Rawls looked
right,
good.
Right, Rawls.
Filling
losing
in for
Rawls.
Him before, and then
right,
now he's
they
hurt.
Lost him. Right.
Right, and then they have, what's his name, Michael.
Right.
You know, he's okay.
Right.
So, you know, maybe if you get, you know, Michael and Rawls healthy at the same time, you know, they could, you know, do a little, you know, alternating whatever, and maybe they could get, you know, a consistent rushing attack and, you know, maybe get that threat back. But I don't know that either one of them or both of them even equals Marshawn Lynch. I mean, Marshawn Lynch was at the top of his game for a long time. And he was a solid running back. I mean, consistent. So, you know,
I
think that's where Seattle is just, you know, they need to almost do a little retool because, you know, of that.
I had read a report or at least an article. Now, I'm going to be honest with you. I don't know if the author is a quote unquote Seahawks insider or if they're an inside, or if they're an inside their basementer. You know what I mean? I don't know. I don't know if this was a report or whether it was an opinion from somebody who doesn't know anything but likes to put crap out on a blog. Read a piece today that the problem, one of the biggest problems right now with the Seahawks is the fact that Russell Wilson has been injured for almost all the season, the entire season, and both Wilson and the Seahawks themselves have been keeping it quiet. So we've had this kind of thing happen before. We've heard about this sort of thing before. It's happened with many other teams where
I don't know that they've been quiet. They've been upfront about it. He hurt his knee week two. It was a sprain. They showed him wearing a brace.
It kind of made less about it than has been.
He's playing through it. I mean, let's face it. We've seen other quarterbacks have nagging injuries that they play through.
Exactly,
I mean,
right.
You know, Roethlisberger, I don't know that ever plays healthy. You know, in Pittsburgh, he always seems to have something wrong with him. You know, and as is the case, you know, he hurt his knee again. And, you know, he's already practicing, ready to go for next week. We'll see. Were they on the bye? No, they're on the bye this week.
They're on a bye this
week. Yeah, he's trying to get ready to go for next week. But he already participated in individual drills since having that knee surgery, believe it or not.
Wow. That is amazing. Absolutely amazing to me.
Because that was the report today out of Pittsburgh.
Well, okay. Anyhow, I think the article, however, that I read, the definite tone to it was that apparently whatever the nagging injury is more serious than is being led on. And that it's a lot bigger handicap, let's put it that way, to Wilson and to the team than most people are.
I would imagine it's hampering his running ability. That's what I would guess.
I don't know. Wilson's somewhat mobile, but I wouldn't necessarily put him in. I mean, he's not in Cam Newton territory.
He puts up some pretty decent numbers.
Hmm.
You know, as running out of the backfield. I'm not saying he's, you know, like you said, he's not like a total world beater, but
he's
put up some solid games as a, you know, rushing numbers.
Yep. Well, anyhow.
And it's clearly something's missing in that offense because their offense is god awful to watch. You know, they don't put up points. They don't look good. They don't, you know, there's really no redeeming factors of the entire thing at the moment.
And it just seems to me that it's a matter of time before some other team, you know, you look at the division and maybe they end up winning the division simply by default, you know, because, you know, the only team that I could possibly see coming in there to legitimately take them over, I guess, is Arizona. You know, the Rams were flirting around with things in the beginning of the season, but as we both kind of suspected, they kind of come back to earth recently. And the San Francisco 49ers are just flat out god awful. They're already talking about making trades. So, you know, and I can't seem to figure out who the hell their quarterback is over there. They don't know what they want to do with the quarterbacks. So they're terrible. So, you know, the Seahawks could end up winning the division and end up being perhaps maybe one of the weakest teams in the entire NFC.
You're correct.
But we will.
That's going to end up being the same as the AFC South division, where you're going to have a team who wins who's not very good because they all suck.
Yeah, I'll have to.
I don't think the Colts. The Colts, Texans, Jaguars. Yeah, none of them. Tennessee. You know, they're all. You know, they're all mediocre. Or you know, I'm not saying they won't be good down the road, but they're not good right now.
Yeah, I'm just curious. I was just pulling up real quick the Seahawks' remaining record here. This weekend they will be playing the this weekend they are playing the Saints. This weekend they're playing the Saints in New Orleans. They've already had their bye, so let's see. Then week 9, they're at home with the Bills. Then they have to go on the road to New England. Then they host the Eagles, Tampa Bay. Then they're hosting Carolina. Then they're at Green Bay. And the last
There's
three
lots
are against,
of losses in there.
And then the last three are against their division. Rams, Cardinals, and at San Fran. Patriots is a loss. Green Bay's a loss. Panthers, you can't tell. I don't know. I don't know. Buccaneers, I don't know. Eagles, I don't know. Bills, I don't know. They shouldn't lose this weekend against the Saints. They could really end up here with
the
rather.
They will lose to the Eagles. They will lose to. Go through that list again, real quick.
All right, this week Saints. Week after, Buffalo Bills. Then the Patriots. Patriots, right. Eagles, Buccaneers, Panthers, Green Bay, Rams, Cardinals, 49ers.
Well, they got at least 4 or 5 because they're going to lose to the Eagles, Patriots, Green Bay, probably the Cardinals, I would think would have a chance. You know, there's probably another loss in there. I really don't like the team. I do not think it's good. So we'll see. We'll see what how Seattle shakes out. But I just don't see them. You know, they may. It's hard to say who wins that division now.
So let's see.
I mean, as soon as you start throwing a tie in it, that always mucks up the whole.
Oh God, it always messes everything up.
All the playoff scenarios get mucked up with a tie.
Yeah, thank God though. Thank God though, Brandon. The ties are with two teams in the same division.
Well,
I mean,
yeah,
it makes it worse when they're spread out over divisions.
Well, even so, though, these teams were both a lot of people projected as playoff contenders. You know, if it starts getting into wild cards, one of them will win a division. Maybe if that division somehow manages to get a wild card, oh God, all the scenarios are going to be all screwed up.
Yep.
Just have to wait and see how it all plays out at this point, though. So.
Now, if in fact Seattle were to end up with, say, as you say, 5 more losses, they would end up with a 9-6-1 record.
Mm-hmm.
9-6-1. Well, that could be good enough to win this division. I mean, considering that the Cardinals right now are 3-3-1 already. The Cardinals have 2 more losses than Seattle. So, all right. Interesting scenarios that we're going to be looking at as we proceed forward.
We always get them as we go down the stretch, you know.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I think that's why the NFL tries to backload the schedule with division games so they can, you know, work that out amongst themselves, you know, in the end. Because as you said, they finish with 3 division games, so. That model doesn't always work out, but they try. You can see the NFL makes an effort to try to make that happen.
Yep, absolutely. And good work on their part. That's the way it should be. All right.
I have to admit, they kind of steal from you as our fantasy commissioner.
I stole from them.
Where they try to start the year. Huh?
I stole from them.
All right. I was trying to give you props.
No, I stole from them. I designed. It just makes sense, particularly when you're in a fantasy league like ours, where we have 4 defined divisions.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you and I have both been in fantasy leagues before where it's 2 divisions. That's it.
Right.
But when you've got them at like ours, where you have 16 teams, and we have divisions, it just makes sense. Open the season with 3. In your division, close the season with 3 in your division, because winning your division in our league is absolutely one of the most important things you have to do. That you win the division and you get into the playoffs. So that's, you know, it just makes sense. So in some respects, I stole it from them, but it also just made sense to me. But all right, let's get over and take a look at the let's take a look at the big upset, I guess, of the weekend. And that was the Philadelphia Eagles taking down the Minnesota Vikings. And doing it, I mean, you know, a lot of people, you kind of went back and forth on this one. You know, you could see Philadelphia possibly beating them. You could see Minnesota more likely winning it. But you probably went into this thinking to yourself, it's probably going to be a close game. Well, in the end, it really wasn't all that close. 21-10, the Eagles won it, won by 11 points. Carson Wentz last week, 16-28, 138 yards, one touchdown, two bad-looking interceptions, and a 52.4 passer rating. This game, Brandon, was won on the back of the Philadelphia Eagles defense, who absolutely, I mean, I'm going to be honest with you, I'm surprised that Sam Bradford at some point or another didn't come up out of one of these at one point or another, you know, injured. The defense knocked Bradford around 16 times, sacked him 6 times, intercepted him once. The Eagles defense was just positively incredible. The, albeit the game, particularly in the first half, was ridiculously sloppy on both sides.
I agree. Yeah, they went back and forth, I think, like 5 or 6 possessions, turnovers back and forth. I mean, it was ridiculous. I mean, this game had some really weird stats. Like, that was, you know, I think they started off with 5 possessions where the possession ended in a turnover. So they basically just kept giving it back to each other. The game was the first in NFL history to have a halftime score of 11-3. That never happened before this week. You know, it was just a very odd game. Sam Bradford clearly looked, I don't want to say he looked shaken. In other words, like he was rattled. He didn't look as good and as calm and as poised as he has, in the other 5, or, well, I guess he only played 4 of their games because he didn't play the first week. So, you know, he looked pretty controlled, calm, cool. Maybe the fact that he played the same team he was playing for last year, even though he kind of downplayed it and said, I don't hold the grudge to Philly. You know, I don't do this. You know, he said all the right things, but it didn't look like he was feeling that way. You know what I mean? It looked like he was feeling the jitters of playing.
Oh, yeah. I think by the second half, for sure. I mean, when you saw him over on the sideline sitting there on the bench, as I said, you know, particularly in the second half, I mean, he just looked, what's the word I want?
Like deer in a headlight.
Overwhelmed. You know, he looked overwhelmed. He looked like, you know, what do we have to do here? You know, like a guy that couldn't breathe, like he couldn't, and that's just kind of the way it looked to me. They really, really came out and put, and see, you know, as we talked a little bit pre-show, you know, I haven't looked at the lineup for this coming Sunday yet, but my guess would be that the Eagles-Dallas game may end up being one of our games for Thursday night on our Friday House Sports Show. If the Eagles bring the identical defense, they bring that kind of intensity to the game on Sunday in Dallas, the Eagles could very well walk away with a win there.
They could, defense, but I think the big difference is Dallas has better weapons at the receiver and tight end positions than does the Vikings. I mean, the Vikings have Kyle Rudolph, but I think Kyle Rudolph and Jason Witten probably are about a wash. even at his, you know, older in his career, Jason Witten still does make plays. Dez Bryant's coming back. They got Beasley and Terrence Williams. They got more weapons. And the Eagles did lose a starting secondary guy for the year to an ankle injury. So, you know, I don't know. It's the same kind of deal. And I think Ezekiel is a better running back than the combination the Vikings threw out there. You know, I mean, Asiata
and McKinnon,
they do an okay job, but they're not Adrian Peterson by any stretch of the imagination. And Ezekiel's just insane this year. I mean, he's absolutely insane. He puts up, what did you say? His average, like 100 plus?
Oh, it's over 100 yards a game.
Yeah, I mean, it's insane. So, do I think the Eagles can win? Yeah, I do. I don't think you can say they absolutely rule them out, but I think it's a tougher challenge. Now, I will say this. I think the Eagles offense has an easier go this week than they did last week. I think the Vikings is better than Dallas. I think that's still the weak part of the Dallas game. But I think when you do start looking at the lines, I got a feeling the Eagles-Cowboys is going to have a relatively high over-under. It may not be the highest on the board, but I would venture a guess that it's going to be one of the top, you know, three or four in score projections for the over numbers. Just based on, you know, what we've seen and the points they put up. I mean, both teams have put up pretty good numbers, you know, on the board, you know, on a week-to-week basis. So they haven't struggled to put up points. But, you know, I think the Eagles have a better defense, but I think the Cowboys have a better overall offense. So I think it's going to be a good game.
Yeah, I agree with you.
I'm not saying it's
going to
be a competitive game, but I until somebody shows me a big weakness in Dallas, because, yeah, they have one loss, and I've probably said it on every one of these shows because it was such a bad loss from the perspective of time management by the receivers at the end of that game. They are literally, you know, one stupid possession or one stupid drive of bad clock management away from being undefeated. And they really haven't been the games they're winning relatively easy. You know, they handled Green Bay in Green Bay. I mean, absolutely, you know, it was never in doubt. So, you know, they're coming off a bye. They're going to be refreshed. They're going to get Dez Bryant back. I don't know. I think it's lining up, and it's in Dallas. It's all the things, you know, falling into alignment tells me Dallas wins this game. That's just my opinion.
You know, you go.
I'm not
teams,
saying it won't be a competitive game.
You go to teams, as we talked about here, with good records, like we just talked about one, Seattle, 4-4-1,
mm-hmm.
Like Atlanta, 4-2. Those are two out of the NFC right off the top of my head without even looking at the standings. Let me look at the, you know, if I pull up the standings here real quick, I could probably come up
Falcons
with two.
The Falcons are 4-3 now.
Okay. They're 4-3?
Yeah.
Okay. They haven't had their bye then. Okay.
No.
You're right. They're 4-3.
Yeah, because if you do remember, I said they'd be 4-4 when they hit game 8. And if they lose this week, I'm right on.
Oh, yeah, I know. I got it written down over here. The Houston Texans, you look at them, they're 4-3, okay? You look at some of these teams that have...
They're a bad 4-3,
Buffalo Bills, 4-3, okay? You look at some of these teams that have right now, they have winning records, and you say to yourself, all right, they have a winning record, but they've got weaknesses here. Here. You look at the Dallas Cowboys, they've got a good winning record, and they have an obvious flaw in defense, and yet it doesn't seem to, as you point out, it doesn't seem to be as glaring as some of the other teams that have winning records right now. It doesn't seem to be as glaring a problem as some of those others, a la the Seattle Seahawks, who just can't seem to put any points on the board whatsoever, or the Atlanta Falcons, who have absolutely no defense whatsoever. So I think your point's well taken that the Dallas Cowboys, while they have an obvious weakness,
well, I wouldn't
it's
even
not
call
glaring.
It a weakness. I would disagree with you. I dispute you because they have one of the lowest points against of any team. I don't care, you know, defensive, if they give up extra yards here and there. I love the points allowed stat, and they have one of the best in the league. So I wouldn't necessarily call them a weakness on defense because, let's face it, there's a lot of times in the games, and I'll even use my team, the Patriots, as an example, where they'll give up chunks of yards just to move the game along. But when they get down to a certain point on the field, all of a sudden they clamp down and they stop, you know, these teams. And I think Dallas is playing that kind of a defense. I don't think you can – I think to say they have a bad defense based on the 107 points allowed that they have in this league, that's doing them a disservice. I mean, that's just my opinion. I mean, yeah, on paper their defense ain't the greatest. There's supposedly holes, but I can't argue. I mean, I look up and down at all the points allowed numbers. They got one of the best in the league. Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously the Eagles have less, so you know that shows out. But I can't fault their defense. They're in the top five of points allowed.
Okay. No, you're right.
I like that. I personally like that stat better than the way they rank defenses, because I know the way they rank defenses, they look at yards allowed, and there's probably a formula for how they rank defense, you know, as far as statistics. But I like the points to me. That's a big factor, because you know teams that can clamp down on the points.
Well, then it would sound to me like what you're saying is it comes down to this. The Dallas Cowboys are the better team in the NFC East, and you know, it's not the Philadelphia Eagles. The Cowboys are a better team than the Eagles at this point right now. So, I'm not saying I would dispute you.
We're coming up on week 8. It's not even going to be the 8th game for these two teams because they both had their bye already. So, you know, I think the jury's out. I mean, it's still out to a degree. I think it's close. But, you know, I think, you know, this game is going to be key, you know, for setting the tone going into the halfway point of the season for the NFC East. I mean, because if you look at it, the Redskins haven't had their bye yet. And they're, you know, a half a game behind the Eagles. They still have 4 wins, and they started off looking horrible, and they've come around to, you know, being a very respectable, at least team.
Recently,
last few weeks. I mean, go back to that Eagles Redskins game a couple weeks ago, and. The week before that against the Giants, you know, the Dallas or the Redskins have rolled off quietly, you know, pretty decent. Now they did lose this past week, but they had a nice little streak going. You know, they're 2-1 in the division. That's not bad 3 games into it. I mean, like I said, I'm not anointing them or anything. I still think both Dallas and the Eagles have a better team, but. Yeah, you could see a 3-way race till this is all said and done.
Oh, there's no doubt about it. I think you probably will. If Washington's in there or not, that remains to be seen. But I think you're going to see Dallas and Philadelphia in it, and it could be Brandon right up to the very very last game, because the very last game of the season. We'll have the Eagles hosting the Dallas Cowboys. That's the very last game of the season. I'll be curious when we're done with the show here tonight. One of the things I will be doing in preparation for Thursday night is I'm going to be going out and taking a look at what the games are and the matchups are, and what might be the best matchups for us to be taking a look at on Thursday night. I will be curious to see the over-under, as you point out. because I'm not convinced about this offense being, at least the Philadelphia Eagles offense being what, you know, and that number, you know, I know you're saying, well, you look at the points against number. It would seem to me if you're looking at that, you're also looking at the points for. But I'm not convinced that this Eagles team really does that great a job in putting points up. Seems to me they get an awful lot of special team and defensive help and putting points up. Interestingly, one of the things that's being talked about right now is the fact that allegedly, or at least there have been some rumors of it, the Eagles are shopping for a trade for a wide receiver. Two names have come up today, one of them being Alshon Jeffrey. Alshon Jeffrey, apparently, there have been conversations between the Eagles and the Chicago Bears. Also conversations between the Eagles and the San Francisco 49ers for Torrey Smith. So I'm going to be honest with you. I'm not in favor of us making a move for Alshon Jeffrey at this moment, because essentially,
well, I'll just say to me, it would all depend on the deal. I mean, Alshon Jeffrey does have talent. I think his statistics this year are limited by the fact that that team is just horrible. They've gone from one quarterback to another to now a third. Although I did read that Jay Cutler is now cleared to play from his thumb injury. Now, whether or not he plays, we'll see. We know Hoyer's got a broken arm, so he's done for the year. He's on IR. So, you know, Alshon Jeffrey, you know, if Alshon Jeffrey would say a receiver with Aaron Rodgers, he would be, I think he would be like in that, you know, the 1B category below the, you know, the A.J. Greens, the Antonio Brown. I think he would be that in that second tier of top receivers. I think he's being very limited by the team he has around him right now.
What he has around him, exactly right.
When that Chicago team had Cutler before he was a total flake, Brandon Marshall on the other side of Jeffrey, Matt Forte running the back, and Martellus Bennett as tight end. Alshon Jeffrey was putting up numbers. I mean, he was putting up solid numbers. You know, now all those people I just mentioned, except for Cutler, are gone. I mean, Marshall's with the Jets, Martellus Bennett's with the Patriots, and I guess Forte's with the Jets too. So, I mean, you know, a lot of a solid player like Alshon Jeffrey, his stats can be affected by what's around him, and I think that's what you're seeing. To the Eagles, that might not be a bad fit. I don't know that the Eagles are severely lacking at wide receiver, but maybe having a clear cut, no doubt about it, number one receiver, which I think if you inserted Alshon Jeffrey on with the current lineup, call him the number one, because I don't know. I don't know that any of the others have distinguished themselves as the clear-cut number one. I think that's the issue. I don't know. It would depend on the deal. If you could get Jeffrey for, say, you know, like a third-round pick, a three or a four, boy, that's a steal. Now, if they're starting talking number one, you know, or even a two, maybe a two. Somewhere between a two and a three is where I would see that falling for
the Eagles.
The
problem with Jeffrey is that right now he's on a franchise tag. That's number one. Number two.
No, he's got a high salary. The Eagles have the cap room. They moved Bradford.
They don't have a hell of a lot of cap room. Number two, he's a free agent come the end of the season. So essentially the Eagles would be trading certainly a draft pick. And the thinking is it would be a one, minimally a two. Minimal. No, nothing less than a two.
There's no way I would do a
Jeffrey.
One for a player on the end of a contract.
You're doing it for essentially a rental. You've got no guarantees that you're going to be able to keep this guy.
Well,
and even
the
if
only
you,
way
even
you...
if you can, even if you can keep him, you've got no guarantees you can pay him because you've got other financial obligations next year.
Yeah, but the only way the Eagles do that deal for a one is as if you negotiate a new deal. That he signs a new contract as part of it. There's no way you do that without a In other words, that's got to be all done prior to the deal. And they would allow that negotiation to happen if it was, if there was a serious trade on the board. So yeah, you don't, you're not giving up a one, because the only one they have is the one they got from Minnesota.
From Minnesota, correct.
So, right. So there, you know, it's a low one. You know, it's going to be
correct.
a lower.
It's
going to
be
a back end. They got a five and one record already. So, you know, Minnesota's not going to, you know, fall off the face of the earth.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's not a super high one, but I don't know that I give a one for Jeffrey. I might be okay with a two, but that's probably the problem. The problem is the two is going to be a low end two, because the Eagles are not going to have a horrible record either. So
I would not do it for, I would not give a one for a guy that I'm only guaranteed to get for 8 games.
No, absolutely not. Like I said, there'd have to be a new contract as part of that deal. They'd have to have the ability, and they would have the, I'm sure they would allow the Eagles to negotiate a new deal with his agent, and they'd have to have an agreement in place before they do it. That's the only way I would
do that. There's no guarantee that Jeffrey or his agent would even go along with that. So,
that's my point. If the Eagles and the agent can't come to a deal, you don't do the deal. It's that simple. You can't give a number one pick for an 8-week guy. Although, you know, Minnesota kind of did with Bradford. I mean, I think Bradford technically signed a 2-year deal, but you know, I think it was I don't know. I don't know if it's a kind of deal they'd want to keep him on. You know what I mean?
However,
a lot's going to depend on Teddy Bridgewater for them.
Bingo. The reports that I'm reading this week are that there are some who are saying more and more, he may never play another game again.
Wow. This isn't even that bad.
Yep.
That's a shame.
So, yeah, it really is. It really, really is. So, the situation with Bradford could become somewhat more, less fluid. Let's put it that way. A little less fluid.
Well,
because at this point, I don't know what else Minnesota would do. Yep,
yeah.
Exactly. Now, with regard real quick to Ezekiel Elliott, because you were bringing up his numbers, and Ezekiel Elliott, as I pointed out, we pointed this out as well, Dallas Cowboys were on a bye last week. Elliott, nonetheless, however, still leads the entire league right now in rushing yards, and he didn't play this past week. 703 yards over 6 games. That's an average of 118 yards a game. That's what he's averaging. Oof. Boy, oh, boy. Yeah. The guy is, you know, there's been talk, you know, about Carson Wentz potentially being rookie of the year. I think at this point right now, hands down, you give it to Elliott. If the season were closed right now, it's Elliott's. Ezekiel Elliott is rookie of the year. 703 yards.
I think you got to bring Dak Prescott's name up too. I mean, there's a couple names we could throw at this that have had pretty good rookie starts. I mean, Dak Prescott, you know, is like I said, you know, one bad drive away from being undefeated as a starting quarterback, you know? So, unfortunately, I think that the problem you have there is you have, you know, two guys on the same team that are rookies competing.
Team.
Yeah. So, you know, it's hard to say who do you give the credit to, because they're both playing out of their mind.
I don't know, man. When you take a look at the impact that Ezekiel Elliott has had, not just on the Dallas Cowboys, but across the league, 703 yards. 5 touchdowns, and that's Ezekiel Elliott competing against who's number two? Alfred Morris is number two.
Well, no, he's
in the
number
league?
Two in the Cowboys. No, he's the backup for Cowboys.
I'm talking about in the league right now. Who's number two in
the
league?
I thought you were talking about the Cowboys. Alfred
who's
Morris
two
is their backup now in Dallas.
Number two, who's number two in the league in yards rushing?
I don't know. I don't have that.
David Johnson. David Johnson, 681. 681. DeMarco Murray is number three, 633. LeSean McCoy is number four. Lamar Miller is number five. I mean, you know, you got a rookie right now leading the league against that group right there. So, not bad. Not bad at all. Real quick, oh boy, holy smokes, I'm looking at the clock. Anybody wants to jump in with us, don't hesitate. 347-826-9964. Time is getting away from us.
Well, it's that fluid thing. Yeah, we go from
pretty
one
quick already.
To the 30. Next.
Yeah, we got just a little over 30 minutes remaining. Holy smokes, we haven't even gotten to anything yet.
Well, really.
We'll touch real quick here on the New York Jets and the Baltimore Ravens. And Brandon, the only reason I've got this game, I had this game on the list at all, was because of the Baltimore Ravens. This was a team that started out the season 3-0 and has promptly gone on and lost four in a row, including this absolutely painful game, had to be painful for the Baltimore Ravens and their fans, painful game to the New York Jets, 24-16 last week, which saw both quarterbacks come in, Geno Smith and then ultimately Ryan Fitzpatrick, when Geno Smith went down with a did he go down with an ACL? Is that what it was ultimately?
Yep.
I think that's what it was.
ACL.
And now Ryan Fitzpatrick is back, no doubt, for the remainder of the season.
Well, they still have Bryce Petty that we've never actually seen for whatever reason.
I know. I don't get it.
I mean,
if Fitzpatrick's
not, you know, doing anything, they're 2-5. The Jets are, you know, where are they going? They're going nowhere in a hurry unless Fitzpatrick, you know, can crank off three wins in a row to bring them back to 500. You know, you might see a Bryce Petty just to see if they, you know, what they got.
You know, Brennan, wouldn't you think that would be the most appropriate thing to do?
Well, maybe not now. I think when you're not halfway through the year yet. You know, you paid Ryan Fitzpatrick a ton of money. You know, for 1 year, I think he signed a 1 year, $12 million contract. You got to get some value. You know, you got to keep fans in the seats. So, you know, you go to game 10, 11, 12. And if you're still, you know, way out of it, not even close to 500, then you go Bryce Petty and see what you got. You know what I mean? I mean, I don't think you go, you know, because essentially if you put him in now, you're showing your fans you're giving up. And I don't think you want to do that just yet. I mean, Geno Smith, I think, was a higher draft pick, you know, a higher drafted quarterback. So, yeah.
At 2-5 and you're four games behind the division leader?
You're only playing for a wild card. Like I said, a couple more weeks of Ryan Fitzpatrick, unless he rolls off three in a row and brings them to 500, that's when you start saying, okay, you know, give me, let's see what Bryce Petty got. And you know he's not going to. They're not going to, you know, I don't even have to look at the schedule to know they're not winning the next three games. That team is not that good. They're just eh. You know, they lost Eric Decker for the year.
They're not even eh.
You know? Yeah, I know.
They're not even eh.
I don't know if
I have ever seen the Jets. Well, okay, I take that back. I won't say ever. I don't think I've seen the Jets look as bad as they do right now in probably the last 10 years. I think they look worse than at any time under Rex Ryan. This team, they look like they don't have a clue. When you watch them play, they look like they don't have a clue. But somehow or another, they managed to put together enough to beat the Baltimore Ravens, who started the season 3-0, and a lot of people thought, oh, the Ravens are back. It just blows my mind. Absolutely blows my mind. And, you know, you go right one more time, go back to Baltimore. No stinking ground game. Brandon, these numbers for this game on the ground, 12 carries for 6 yards is what they had on the ground. That's Baltimore's numbers. 12 carries, 6 yards. The Jets' defense, rush defense, is not that good. I mean, seriously, there is something seriously wrong with Baltimore. Honest to God. And it's with all due respect, it's not Joe Flacco. Who at this point,
yeah,
if I were Joe Flacco,
I'd that.
Want to get the hell off the team. Seriously, I'd want to run.
No, I think they're in the process of their defense. They had a dynasty type defense for years, and if they all got all the tired at the same time, so you can't just say, okay, I'm going to plug everything in and go now. You know what I mean? You can't just get all new players at once. It doesn't always work out that way, and I think that's why, you know, you're seeing a slower buildup for the Ravens. In other words, they got a
Ravens.
You had Ray Lewis. You had who was the safety who was forever. He retired. Suggs. I don't think Suggs is playing any longer either. I mean, it's like they all got old and retired essentially at the same time. You know, and I think that's just, you know,
yep.
Unfortunately, I think that's just how you go. You just gotta rebuild. And I think, like I said, I don't think it's something you can do immediately. So we'll just have to wait and see.
Yep. All right. Well, it just, it blows me away because I'm going to be honest with you. I kind of had bought in, as I know quite a few other people had at the beginning of the season. You know, you're seeing the Ravens 3-0, and I had kind of bought in saying, oh, okay, well, good. You know, the Ravens are going to give the Steelers a run for it. You know, they're going to give Cincinnati a run for it. But
Cincinnati's the most disappointing of all of them that you brought up to me.
Okay.
I don't. I thought Cincinnati was going to be, you know, even if they were on par with what they were last year, they should have a better record than 3-4.
Mm-mm. And I'm just looking. They did win this past weekend, but they were playing the 0-7 Cleveland Browns. Bengals 31-17 over the Cleveland Browns, and that win gave them their third win. Going
yep.
into this game, they were 2-4.
Yep. Like I said, more disappointing.
Yep. Yeah. Okay. You got a point there. You got a point there. But you know, I guess we'll wait and see what is Baltimore on a bye as well this week. Baltimore might also be on a bye this week.
Not sure.
Baltimore is on a bye. Excuse me. Baltimore is on a bye as well. I guess we'll wait and see how they look when they get back up off of their bye week 9.
My guess is you'll see the Ravens end up somewhere around an 8-18 when it's all said and done. I think that's about where they are at this point. I think they're not horrible. But they're not, a year, maybe two away. And Flacco's still relatively young. Not like, you know, up against the clock with, you know, Flacco. So they have an opportunity. They have a few more good years out of Joe Flacco.
I would agree with you.
I think the next two drafts will be key, and you know what kind of moves they make. I mean, they could be one away. You know, you don't know. They could sign a free agent or two. Defenses, you can make a bigger impact with a defensive signing generally in the free agent market than you can with the offense. It just seems to work out that way. I don't know why, but
mm-hmm.
you know.
No, I agree. I'm just keeping my eye on the clock and what have you. Jump over real quick. We'll take a look at the Atlanta Falcons and the San Diego Chargers. San Diego won that game 33-30 against the Falcons. And, you know, you kind of alluded to it before. Falcons now 4-3. They got a game this week. Just checking. They're right. We had already determined they're not on their bye yet. Atlanta actually is next week. Atlanta's bye is next week. But could very well be at the 4-4 mark, as you kind of predicted, could very well be there by week 8.
Who are they playing this week again? Is it Green
Bay?
Yeah.
Good question. I'll check that
one. I'm pretty sure it's Green Bay.
Oh God, are they really? Oof. Well, that's anyhow, this game between the Chargers and the Atlanta Falcons, exactly what you might have expected, right, Brandon? I mean,
lots of points, bad defense.
I was going to say 800 yards of offense between the two teams. 800 yards between the two teams. 400 and some yards for Atlanta.
63 points.
Yeah. 400 and some yards for San Diego. I will give it to they Atlanta got 130 yards on the ground. Tevin Coleman had 64 yards on the ground. Devonta Freeman had 58 yards on the ground. So they are starting to balance it out a little bit, but you know, the telltale sign is no defense on either side of the ball for either of these two teams. No defense for San Diego, no defense for Atlanta. I think, you know, I just wanted to touch on it only because of the fact that you had made the prediction, you know, a numerous weeks ago that ultimately it was going to be the defense that was going to be the demise of the Atlanta Falcons. And it looks like it's going exactly as you kind of laid it out there.
Well, yeah, and Matt Ryan's kind of cooled off. I mean, he had a great start. You know, his line this week's kind of mediocre. I mean, 273 yards, a touchdown, an interception. It's nothing stands out as being, you know, like his earlier performances. And I'm not knocking him. Don't get me wrong. I think these two teams are very similar. I think they have, you know, an offense that can score, but they can't stop anybody. I think Atlanta's offense may be slightly better than the Chargers' offense, and maybe the Chargers' defense is slightly better than the Falcons' defense, but neither one of these teams is going anywhere. It's going to be, you know, around 500 somewhere when it's all said and done. I think that's probably going to be for both teams. I don't see, you know, maybe because of the division the Falcons are in, maybe they may have a chance at making the playoffs. I don't think the Chargers do. I think the Chargers are pretty well beat because, you know, the Raiders and Broncos are going to be games ahead of them. You know, they already are, two games technically ahead of them now, maybe, well, 2.5, I guess, because they all played 7 in that division. So, yeah, it's just, I just don't see the Chargers going anywhere. You know, the Falcons may be lucky because of their division. I mean, the Buccaneers are, you know, they're at 500, and that's about where they belong. The Saints and the Panthers are just done. I mean, a 1-5 record at this point. I mean, yeah, they had their bye last week. That's the first time you can, in a long time, say, you know, if a team truly needed it, it was probably them. You know, they had a pretty horrible start, so we'll see how they look coming back, but I don't think at this point, I don't know that they can, as much they can do.
Too little, too late.
Yeah.
Too
unfortunately,
little, too late.
I mean,
and
the Falcons will probably just outlast them, surely, on the fact that they already have a, you know, a 3-game lead on them.
And I've contended for the longest time that the two worst teams in the NFC, and I'm still going to stick by, I wasn't anticipating that Carolina was going to be quite as bad as they are, but I'm still going to stick by it. I still think that the New Orleans Saints and Chicago Bears are the two worst teams in the NFC. Now, you know, in the end, that might turn out to be incorrect. I mean, a team like San Francisco might actually end up with a worse record than perhaps maybe a team like New Orleans. But those Bears are absolutely, they're absolutely horrid. They are horrid.
Well, all three teams you've mentioned, none of them are any good. I think you can probably, even though the Rams got lucky and won a few early, I think you can throw them in that same bucket when it's all said and done. I think they're all going to be, you know, they're going to be the ones at the top of your draft board this next year. It's going to be the Bears and the Saints and the 49ers and the Rams. I think, you know, if Carolina don't figure it out, they'll be in there too. But that would
yeah, they will be
a bit of a shocker. I have a feeling Carolina's still going to find a way to win some games. I think they put themselves, you know, in a hole so deep that they may not even be able to make a wild card. Because, you know, you got three teams in the NFC North, you know, even with the Lions at 4-3, you know, you got three teams in the NFC East with the Redskins at 4-3, you know, to get a wild card in the NFC, it's going to be a tall order, you know, coming out of that South at this point. Cause I mean, I think you got, you know, you got the Eagles, Cowboys, and Redskins, and you got the Vikings, Packers, and Lions. You know, out of those six, only four of them are making it at best, and that would then chew up all your wild cards. So I think, unless Carolina can find a way to, you know, catch and pass the Falcons, you know, well, they may. I don't know if they've played yet, and they probably have at least one game yet against them. It's not out of the realm of possibility, but tall order at this point, I would say.
Yeah, I would absolutely agree. I think it's just a situation of too little, too late there.
Yeah, I think you're going to get a wild card team out of the East and the North. I think that's just the way this is shaping up. You know, I think the West and the South are going to get the division winners, and the other two are going to be your wild cards. It's just I think the teams are already kind of. Unless, you know, unless something changes, but, you know, right now.
Lining up that way, yep. The situation, though, with the Bears, I really, really believe that that team ought to just, I mean, they just need to tear the whole thing down and start over. That's really where I think, and I think they have to do that starting next year with Jay Cutler. He's got to go. You start right there, and you just start working through it and just, you know, come up with a plan, recognize that you're going to be 2-3 seasons in the rebuild, and just start working towards that goal. That's what you do. But, boy, oh, boy, Falcons, I don't know. I don't know. I kind of thought that they would, well, and they might. They, you know, as you point out, they might very well end up winning that division. That might be one of those situations, kind of like Seattle, where they win it by default. But, and I recognize, as you did, that, yeah, you're right. Their defense is not very good. In fact, it's pretty bad. But I just kind of thought they're going to be a team that's going to be in the playoffs, and they might be, but it might just be by, as we pointed out, it might be by default. New England Patriots, 27-16 over the Pittsburgh Steelers last week. And Tom Brady now, after three games, has already accumulated over 1,000 yards. 19-26 the other day, 222 yards, two touchdowns, no interceptions. 124.2 passer rating. And you know, what can you say? It was just the same old Gronkowski touchdown. Oh, there's James White again. Two touchdowns for LeGarrette Blount.
And 127 yards, too.
Yep. Wow. Yeah. The story of this game, to me, Brandon, was the fact that it just seemed like the Pittsburgh Steelers kept squandering opportunities. You know, as you watched the game, there were so many times they shot themselves in the foot that they had opportunities to advance, to move forward, to make an impact. And they just got – they seemed to almost stymie themselves. Landry Jones, I didn't think played horribly. 29 of 47, 281 yards, had a touchdown and one interception. He wasn't terrible. Le'Veon Bell, as we kind of suspected, was going to have a big role. 81 yards on the ground, another 68 yards through the air. So, you know, what are you looking at there? Almost 150 all-purpose yards for Le'Veon Bell. Holy smokes. I just kind of thought, boy, oh, boy, Pittsburgh had a chance on a number of occasions to move ahead, but they just didn't seem to be able to capitalize on it.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a combination of that and probably defense coming up with a stop at the right time. You know, I've noticed this before about the Patriots. They'll give up some yards, but when they get to a certain point on the field, they start clamping down. And, you know, I think you saw some of that in this game. I think some of Pittsburgh's problems were self-induced. I think the Patriots were, you know, squandered some opportunities as well. I think they could add more points. So, you know, I think it was not a – I don't think this was a model offensive game on either side. You know what I mean? I think there were some good performances on both sides, but I don't think either offense was like, completely firing, you know what I mean, on all eight cylinders. So I think that's, you know – well, if Pittsburgh can get Roethlisberger back next week, as they're kind of projecting, I think Pittsburgh will be fine. I think they'll, you know, they'll – probably come back to their early season form and start putting up, you know, putting some beatings on some teams. I think Pittsburgh still wins that AFC North. I think New England is just getting ready to throttle the Bills this week. I predict this is going to be one of those games where, you know, if they talk about motivation, you know, I said before, you know, Brady's going to come out, you know, with a chip on his shoulder. Well, not only that, you have, you know, Rex Ryan came into New England and shut out the Patriots. Belichick's coming into this game, you know, with a chip on his shoulder. So look out. This could be one of those, you know, 40-something to three games. Yeah, I don't see this not being, you know, a Patriot domination against the Bills. Because I don't think the Bills can stop them, I'll be honest with you. I think the Bills had everything go their way in that first game. And it was only 16-0. You know, yeah, it was a shutout. But Buffalo only managed 16 points. To me, that's not, you know, that's not enough with Brady back. Look, I mean, and Gronk is now healthy. You know, that was another factor in that first game. Gronk might have played, but he wasn't himself. And, you know, they didn't have, their quarterback situation was a mess. They had two guys hurt. You know, the one guy who was playing clearly couldn't throw the ball because of his fingers or whatever the ligament issue he had, Brissett. So, you know, I think this is going to be a totally different outcome this week. And I think Pittsburgh will come back and they'll right the ship as well. I don't think they got lucky in the sense that the rest of their division's kind of playing down. I mean, we already covered the Ravens and Bengals a little bit. And the Browns are just the worst team in the league. Right now, they're going on starting quarterback number 5 right now because they can't keep anybody healthy. Josh, we had Charlie Whitehurst, Cody Kessler, who's now had a concussion. Now we have the hope starting this week. So we're to number 5 in 7. Well, I guess it's going to be their 8th game. So you've had 5 different starting quarterbacks for 8 games. You ain't winning much in the NFL when you're your number 5 quarterback. So, yeah. Like I said, I think Pittsburgh's still going to win this division. They're going to win it easily. Unless Cincinnati can somehow magically get back to their last season form. And I think we already covered the Ravens in depth enough. I just don't see them being able to make a push just yet. So I think Pittsburgh's got this okay.
Check your jack connection there because you're cutting in and out an awful lot. I would agree that it the way things look right now in the AFC North, you know, and, you know, I mentioned we're almost halfway through the entire season, and you know, so now things are really starting to come into definition. Baltimore 3-4. We talked about them. Cincinnati at 3-4. We've talked about them. Pittsburgh's division, despite the fact they're only one game ahead of both the Ravens and the Bengals, Baltimore's division, in my opinion, or Pittsburgh's division rather, to lose. Right the ship, despite the fact, you know, you're down on your quarterback, and despite the fact that perhaps maybe in this one particular game against the Patriots, they missed a couple of opportunities that I thought they should have been able to do something with. But I would agree with you on that.
I agree.
One, all the way
yeah,
around,
I think, I think both
around.
Teams both teams had some missed opportunities in that game, without a doubt.
Missed opportunities. How about a missed opportunity just to get a W? And that is what we're talking about that occurred on Sunday night. I'll tell you something. I'll be curious to see how bad the ratings were, Brandon, for the Seattle Seahawks and the Arizona Cardinals. You know, because here you go. This is a primetime game. This is one of those games they've been talking about that has been so dramatically affected by ratings to begin with. As much as one third down from a season ago. I can't wait in the next day or two to see what the ratings were for this game, which ended up in a 6-6 tie. The worst part about it, Brandon, was they had over 750 yards of offense between the two teams. Arizona had 443 yards of offense. Seattle had 257 yards of offense on their side. So you're looking at almost 750 yards right there for the two teams. Oh, maybe a little bit, give or take a couple of yards, a little bit less than that. But that's insane. So while I'm praising it and saying, boy, oh boy, the two defenses were right there, there was a heck of a lot of offensive yardage in this game. Carson Palmer threw for 342 yards. Russell Wilson did throw for 225 yards. Russell Wilson actually ended up with a better passer rating than Carson Palmer, 81.5 versus 80.5 for Carson Palmer. So while I've been sitting here, you know, at the top of the program and saying, well, the Seattle Seahawks don't look very good, and I'm not quite sure about Russell Wilson, you know, on paper, he actually had a better game than Carson Palmer did. Arizona Cardinals had 132 yards on the ground. David Johnson ran for 113 yards. Just a crazy, crazy situation, which saw some really bad field goal kicking.
Yep.
At the end. Stephen Hauschka ended up being 2-for-3 on field goals. Chandler Cannizzaro, 2-for-4. So the difference came down to those field goal situations, and it was, I'll tell you, in some respects it was, if you like defensive games, it's difficult for me to judge based on me because I'm a sports nut. I didn't mind the game, but I could imagine where other people, your average fan, would just sit there and just get completely, you know, their eyes would be glassed over by this game. It didn't bother me.
I didn't make the end, I will say that.
Okay.
But looking at the stats, you got almost 450 yards of offense, and yet you didn't score a touchdown for the Cardinals. You got 342 passing yards from Carson Palmer and 132 rushing yards. So you're probably over. Well, I don't know. Why is it showing the team yardage is 311? I don't understand that discrepancy there in this one stat I'm looking at. But anyway, all those yards and they didn't score a touchdown. I don't know. The kickers, they missed. But I can't believe you can't put a touchdown on the board when you're putting up that many offensive yards. You know what I'm saying? I can see it on the other side a little bit. Their offensive numbers are kind of anemic for Seattle. Nothing jumping out, you know, at their stats that says, you know, so-and-so did a good job. I don't see anything. So, yeah, that's pretty much this game has to go down. It's one of the worst ever. We've had quite a few this year that have just been really bad football games, and maybe that's part of the ratings issue. I don't know. I mean,
well, it might be.
We've had all kinds of speculation and, you know, denials. I mean, we had the NFL and Colin Kaepernick can actually agree that his shenanigans are not causing the ratings, at least publicly anyway. So, you know, I don't know. I can't tell you what the problem is.
I will say this. I think that you are absolutely positively going to see a dramatic change in the lineups of games, the schedule of games that you're going to see in primetime viewing slots come next season. The NFL will sit down. They will address this very, very proactively. They will not be putting dog games on Thursday night. They will not be putting on, you know, they're going to make sure they have some of the better. And not that this shouldn't have been a good matchup. I mean, for God's sakes, you know, I guess when they were putting the schedule together, they were looking at it and going, it's an interdivision matchup between Seattle and Arizona. Come on, this is going to be
a
good game.
Two playoff teams, yep.
Right. They couldn't have anticipated this, all right? So I'll give them a pass on this one. But particularly on those Thursday night games, I think you're going to see a dramatic improvement in the quality of the games that you're going to be seeing broadcast. Because I don't think the NFL is going to want to level the playing field and say, was this year a fluke in these ratings problems? That's what they're going to want to do.
Yeah, but the Thursday night games have been a problem since they came out. They have been god-awful every year. This is the third year of them. And they have not had a good block of games on the Thursday package yet. You know? I think you almost got to go back to that Mark Cuban article. It's too many nights of – they're trying to dominate too many nights of the airwaves. And people are just saying, no, I'm not watching it, you know, and that's that. You know, you got Sunday, you know, maybe we'll watch Monday night. You know, they don't want to hear about Thursday.
Yeah.
You know, and maybe it's got to be chalked up as a failed experience, a failed experiment. You know, they do Saturdays towards the end of the year, too. It's like, you know, come on, NFL. Keep your days. You got Sunday and Monday. Call it done.
All right.
Maybe that's what they got. I don't mind the Thursday games, except for the fact that, unfortunately, you know, if you have to get up, you know, for work the next day, the games do run late, you know. And I don't know. They put them on later for the, you know, to get that, you know, West Coast market. But then you kind of shut out some of the East Coast at the end, I think. I don't know if there's a, you know, a good meeting point. You know what I mean?
I got you. All right, that is our program for this evening. I want to remind everybody, please, to be here with us on Thursday night for our Frat House Sports Show, number 267, I think, coming to you, 7 p.m. Eastern time. Make sure you're here for that one. In the meantime, listen, plenty of sports on this evening. You've got Game 1 of the World Series coming up here momentarily. I know there's a lot of hockey on out there, NBA kicking in as well this right now tonight. So get out there and, hey, enjoy your sports and catch us here on Thursday night. Thanks very much.